Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Columbus ASHRAE podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jay Meyer, and I am here as always with
Rafi with KFR Engineers.
And we have our special guest today, Julia Timmerman
with Air Control Products.
Welcome. So you just got done giving us all a very awesome presentation on ethics, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But you have been in several different roles at ASHRAE, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up here?
So I am an HVAC engineer. I started out working for a contracting company as a co-op while I was going to Ohio State. I then, after graduation, went to work for an engineering firm. Then went back to work for another contractor, then went back to work for an engineering firm, and now I work doing sales for a manufacturer's rep. The nice thing about it is that I have a very well-rounded base of knowledge, and that I've seen our industry from the contractor side, from the engineer side, and now also from the manufacturer side. And I feel that it helps me in dealing with my clients to be able to look at their problems and provide them with solutions from a creative standpoint that not everyone is able to do. I have lived in Columbus since I graduated from college. I grew up about 50 minutes south of Columbus. And I currently have two children. I have a 19-year-old who's a freshman at OSU, and I have a sophomore at Dublin. So I got involved in ASHRAE very early on in my career and started volunteering with ASHRAE's Columbus Chapters Board. I went through all the board positions, which there's a great group of people, as you guys know. It takes about 10 years if you want to join the board and go all the way through. So a couple years ago, I finished my 10-year commitment to the Columbus board. I also, about the middle of that process, started doing things at society level. In 2018, I went to the ASHRAE Winter Conference, was in Las Vegas, and I shadowed Doug Thick, who was the DRC at the time, and that was when I started becoming very actively involved in ASHRAE at a society level. ASHRAE has a great program that all the regions offer it, in that for every winter or summer conference, one person from within the region can shadow the DRC, and the cost of it is paid for between the region and society for that member. And it's to introduce younger members who have the potential to become involved in society to society. And what does ASHRAE society mean? What are all the facets of it? How does it function? And try and get newer members to become actively engaged at a society level. So our region is very lucky in that we have successfully used that program and have quite a few people that have gone through it that are now extremely active at ASHRAE at a society level.
Nice.
Yeah.
So going back to your career, was there certain catalysts that caused those moves between the, you know, fields of our industry?
There were. When I switched from contracting to engineering, the first time it was because I did the 10-year career path to graduate college because I started work. I co-opted and then I started working, and the contractor I worked for was paying for my college. So
awesome.
Yeah, but it was also with the stipulation you only took one or two classes.
Sure.
Right, because I was working full time while they were paying for them. So at the point that I finished college, I decided that I wanted to do full-time engineering instead of being a project manager.
Sure.
And so that was why I switched jobs at that point.
Oh.
When I switched back to...
What year was that, by the way?
That would have been 2005.
Okay. Just to give our listeners an idea of when she was talking, I guess.
Yeah.
How often are you hearing about contractors offering... you know, some kind of stipend for schooling.
That contractor actually offered it for everyone. They had a program where They would pay for you to take classes. I think it's just more common with engineering firms than it is with contractors.
Yeah.
Because I know that all the engineering firms I worked for had continuing ed that they would do, whether it was PDH courses for your PE or whether it was you wanted to go back and take a class to better yourself in something. So, and I think a lot of the contractors also do it. They may not do it to where you're like you're finishing your degree, but they'll pay for you to go take a course at the BX, or they'll pay for you to take a CPR course or certification or something. Yes.
Okay. Awesome. And then you went from engineering and
I went back to contracting, but that had more to do with 2009 and the economy than anything.
Yeah, I remember those.
So then the big move between going from engineering over to the manufacturer's representative side, what was the catalyst there?
Burnout.
Okay.
I worked for a very small firm that they're a great group of people. However, when you are doing mission critical and you go through COVID doing mission critical, you kind of got burned out. And so I actually a year after everything had basically normalized from COVID and I finished out the large project that I had been working on, I decided that it was time for a job change just to help with the burnout.
So any thoughts, I guess, what were the thoughts that, you know, I always like to make a pros and a cons list of everything I do. So was there certain heavier pros for going to like the sales side? Because I know that there's a lot of young engineers right now that are in either a consulting role or on the sales side. And I know that they talk about all the time switching between the two. Was there things you wish you would have known before?
Not really. The biggest thing I would say for someone that's in their 20s and thinking about making the change is it's personality driven.
Sure.
For engineers, I would say 80% of them have one personality and 20% have a different personality. You have introverts and you have extroverts.
Sure, sure.
And they tend to be 80% introvert, 20% extrovert. If you're an extrovert, sales is great.
Sure, sure.
However, if you're an introvert and you would rather just draw drawings and not talk to clients and not talk to anyone and let me live in my little cubicle and not do any, stay in engineering.
Right.
And not that you wouldn't be able to succeed at sales, but you won't be as happy at it because you have to be outgoing. You have to like people. You have to be willing to talk to people.
Right. Communication.
And if you don't enjoy that, it will drive you up the wall.
Was that something that was apparent to you when you made the change? You were just like, no, I like talking to people. I'm going to do this. Or did you have to feel it out first?
No, I've known that for a very long time. Like to the point of one time when I interviewed for an engineering position, it was like my third interview and it was with the owner of the company. He's like, yes, you are definitely not the typical engineer. You talk a lot. I like people.
Yeah, right, right.
We like podcast guests that talk a lot.
Yes, we do. That? Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
So I've known my entire life that I was more of a people person.
Sure.
My mother would tell you stories about when I was like 5 and going to the grocery store with her and she lost me. I was the next aisle over talking to the random strangers.
Sounds a lot like me. I'm sure it sounds like you when you were younger too.
Yeah.
So what were some of the projects? How would they differ? So if you took the same project that you were experiencing on the consulting engineer side, the contractor side, and the sales rep side, the same project, how do you think you approach those three things since you've done all of them?
So the nice thing I will say about the sales side that I like is that I can look at someone else's drawings and go, oh, well, that won't work. Okay, so this is what you need. Tell the contract. This is what you need to do to fix this. Like, this
is a value add.
Yes, it's a value add.
Right.
I feel it's also a lot easier to do that to someone else's drawings than it is your own. When you're your own design drawings, you become so engrossed in them and so deep into them that you can have mistakes in them that you don't even realize they're there because this is the same as when you write a paper. You read what you want it to say, not what it does say.
Right.
So you look at them and think that they're doing something, but they're really not, because your mind has just made it correct, even though it's not correct.
There's also an emotional attachment,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
You spent 70 hours on that.
You were at the office till 2 in the morning, you know, just working on that one room, you know?
Yeah. You become very attached to it, and you can't look at it objectively anymore.
Right.
Unless you can, if you are able to set it aside for about 2 weeks, and then come back and look at it. But the way design works, and the time frame for design, you don't have that window to where you can complete the drawing, set it aside, come back and look at it 2 weeks, make any corrections you need to, and then send it to the owner for review. You're literally trying to finish last minute things on it to shoot it out to the owner, and then afterwards the owner is going, well, you messed up these three things.
Right.
Because the schedule is so fast that you just can't build into it time to set it aside and then come back and review it.
That's one of those introductory things that I tell some of my younger engineers when I'm sitting down to teach them how to lay out ductwork. You know, there's a general idea of how to lay out ductwork, and there's some, you know, lessons learned from everybody's careers and things like that. But I always tell them, look, if I came and laid this out, you know, 2 weeks from now, keep in mind, I might lay it out a little different.
Yeah.
So don't ever get too stuck on something. You know, there might be, sure, you can move that over there and move that down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
there's multiple ways of doing everything.
So many different ways. Yeah. Especially on larger projects and stuff, when you're looking at it from a holistic point of view, you know, you've got all of your mains and everything laid out, but where that airflow needs to go, it's not going to change in the actual design, but it is going to change in your mind several times throughout the design. So it's always an interesting aspect of designing something. Putting so much time into it is that emotional tie to it. And it kind of puts blinders on you a lot of the times too.
It becomes your baby.
Totally, yeah.
So that sums up a little of the sales versus, you know, design engineer. How about the contractor side? That's something I've not had a lot of experience with. When you're on the contractor side, how are you viewing that same project coming across your desk?
Your
dollar sign.
Well, there's dollar sign, but there's also maintenance. A lot of times the contractors are looking at the maintenance of the equipment more than anyone else. Like, what are the clearances? How do I get the filters out of this air handling unit?
How am I getting it to that location?
How am I getting it to the building, into the building? Mm-hmm. So you put this air handling unit here, but you know there's a column right in front of the access door. What were you planning on doing so that we can maintain it later? Theirs is more the how do you get it in, and how does the owner / the contractor take care of it afterwards? Whereas the engineer is looking at it as more a holistic system, and does my system solve the client's problem? Am I providing air to the right places? Is the air the right temperature? Are we returning enough air back to the system? Not noticing that always that, oh, the thermostat's on that pole over there, and there's an air device right over it that's blowing straight on it. Like, your installing contractor, if you have a good one, is noticing those things.
Right. And that's why I always tell my younger engineers to walk the site with one of their contractors that they have a good relationship that's been working in the building. Always make those relationships. Networking is so key.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of larger healthcare clients that take how many RFIs that are put into on a project through their, you know, third-party software, and that is an actual KPI, a metric that they're using,
going
forward, you know, as about what the health of that project was. But, you know, a lot of younger people don't do it these days, but you can pick up a phone and call your contractor and ask them, hey, is this going to work? Can you run through this before I actually submit these?
Yeah.
Just highlight anything that you're seeing here that's going to be a big problem going down the line.
Yeah. Like, the more relationship that you can build as an engineer with the contractor on your projects, or the contractors, like you said, if you have one that's a resource that you can use long-term, the better you're gonna be as an engineer, because they have hands-on experience that as engineers, we never fully grasp. We don't spend enough time in the field to grasp it. But they're your best resource. Yeah. I am the daughter of a farmer, and your project foremen are very similar to farmers, and like they will solve the problem. You may not always like the way they solve the problem, but they will solve the problem. So you just need to ask them sometimes, how do you solve this problem? You may have to tweak their solution some because it may not work completely for where you want it to end up, but they will give you a solution to the problem 9 times out of 10.
Yep. Wow.
In a similar relationship issue, I mean, we talked today about ethics, and we have contractors, we have owners, we have design engineers, we have salespeople. Right. Tell us a little bit about ethics in engineering, in ASHRAE in particular, and how you came to be the resident expert.
Oh, that's because I got suckered into joining a technical committee. I shouldn't say suckered. So ASHRAE has technical committees on every single topic related to our industry that you could possibly imagine. And I, probably 8 years ago now, joined TC 1.7, which is Business Ethics and Legal Matters. I am, until June, the chair of that TC. I will end my two-year term as chair in June. But the biggest thing that that TC does is programs at the summer conference. And one of the programs we do every year is ethics. And they have done it for at least 15 years. Like, they've done it forever because, and the way they do, reason they do it every single year is because most states require, if you have a PE, that you have 2 ethics courses per 2-year renewal cycle. So if someone goes to the summer conference every summer and takes ethics class there, they have covered PDH requirements for their PE renewal. But as part of that committee, I started teaching ethics at the summer conference, and then the chapters in our region found out that I was teaching ethics at the summer conference and started asking me if I would do it for the chapter level since I was doing it at the society level. So last year, I taught ethics to 8 different chapters in Ohio.
You are the resident expert.
Yeah. Yes.
What's so important about ethics anyway? Right. Yeah. I mean, is ethics really that important?
Right.
As an engineer, yes. Well. Ethics is really that important. Ethics guides every decision as an engineer you are making. Based on the oath as a PE that you take when you get your PE, ethics guides all your choices. And ethics can be very cut and dry and boring to do. And I think that's one reason why I like teaching it, is because doing the case studies makes it more interactive. It makes people actually think about ethics and how, if you change a variable in a situation, how you view the ethics of that situation can change. And that also how something was viewed in 1990 versus now, it may have been an ethical dilemma back then versus now, we look at the same question and we're like, wait, no, there's no ethical dilemma here. What are you talking about? Why are you even asking us this question? So I find it interesting to look at the ethics of things, but also to listen to people when I present the class and what their points of view are and how they think about it and how we all think about things just a little bit differently. But we usually, as a group of engineers, we usually have a pretty close consistent concept. We come to a consistent message, but we all have a slightly different point of view to it.
Yeah. On that teaching note, was there anybody in your career that stands out to you as like, this was my mentor for a good part of my career?
Oh.
Because realize you're a mentor now.
I know. I am. I know. Yeah. I've thought about that.
Yeah.
Actually, probably the biggest one I would say was Ed Garrity, who works for CEC currently, is actually in the meeting today. I worked for him when I worked for Brunner, which was the contractor I started out co-oping for. And then he was actually when I switched and took my first engineering job, it was to work for him. He's a very good engineer. He's also an amazing person. And he and I have stayed close, like, my whole career. Yeah. So he is a really great guy.
That's great.
So how about someone who's now just getting out of college, they're taking their first steps into the, you know, the engineering world. What advice do you have to give them as a mentor?
I would say, one, join ASHRAE. Wow. There's my ASHRAE plug. Sure. But I say that because of the depth of the network in ASHRAE. Even if you don't become involved in ASHRAE at a society level, you just become involved in ASHRAE at a chapter level, you will meet so many people that you wouldn't meet otherwise. And in Columbus especially, the group that we have will help each other. Like, you can reach out to anyone and ask them a question and they'll answer it for you. They're an amazing group of people. And they're very diversified between there's contractors and there's salespeople and there's engineers and there's some facility managers and there's a couple teachers. Like, there's this really broad breadth of knowledge that as a starting engineer, if you need to ask someone a question, you need a mentor, you can find one. I would also say never be afraid to ask questions. Asking questions is never, never bad. Not asking questions when you don't know how to do something and trying to fake your way through it is always bad. You will dig a hole that you will not be able to get out of. So yeah, always, always, always ask questions. Because asking questions not only is helpful when you don't know the answer to something, but it also is helpful because it helps you to learn something deeper than you already do by asking someone in your office that knows more than you questions about a project you're designing or a concept you're trying to work on. Having that conversation will help you learn, but it also, when we have conversations with people, we tend to retain the knowledge more than when we just read it on a screen and Google it and look it up.
Also helps you communicate more effectively,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It helps you learn communication skills. It helps you develop interpersonal skills with other people.
And maybe it helps a you jumping remember. Off point for another conversation where you're learning even more, too.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. Wow.
And people like to answer questions.
Sure.
For the most part, don't be afraid to ask a question of someone who's a more senior than you. Because people like to answer questions. They like to help, especially when you're young. I mean, I feel like that's a huge advantage you have as a young engineer. Yeah.
Going to someone and saying, I need help. I don't understand this. And explain what this is. People, you're right. They love to be able to help, to provide the information, to teach someone the things that they already know, and to teach the next generation how to do whatever that thing the question is about.
Yeah.
Julia, thank you so much for joining us here today on the Columbus ASHRAE podcast. Any final thoughts on a sign-off?
Go become involved in ASHRAE and enjoy your careers within our industry.
And I'd say join a TC as well.
Yes, join a TC.
Definitely.
Become involved.
Yeah.
Because ASHRAE society is made stronger by all of us. And if we're not willing to be actively involved, then it doesn't exist. And it exists only for us. So we need to be involved and to help it grow.
Thanks again.
Yeah, happy holidays. We'll see you in Vegas.
Yes.
Yeah.
HR Vegas 2026. See you there.